What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. Hope everybody's doing well out there. I'm enjoying this little bit of warm weather that we got. It was in the 20s here just about a few days ago. Now it's in the 60s to 70s, and I just saw a notification on my phone that there might be snow this weekend. So who knows what to do? I guess you got to wear like a snowsuit and flip-flops so you can be prepared for everything. But anyway, we got a little bit of news to break. You know, it's the off season. It's kind of a slow period, not a whole lot to talk about, especially being a primarily football-focused podcast here. But I do have some things that we can talk about. Obviously, we got some news that broke yesterday. I have a new article that I put up on the website talking about the strength of the Florida State brand, and we're going to cover that as well. And if we have time at the end of the show, I'm going to tack on a little story for you guys for the first time that I met Bobby Bowden. I think you'd enjoy that. I've been talking about it for a while. We just haven't had a chance during the season for me to actually tell it to you guys. So it's a fun little story about the first time I got to meet him. And I just started reading a new Bobby Bowden book about a week or so ago. I'm only a couple chapters into it, so we won't go too far, but it's just something that had it on my mind. So anyway, let's get right into it. So obviously, you guys probably heard the news that Florida State and Mike Norvell have agreed to a multi-year contract extension that is going to keep Mike Norvell in Tallahassee, theoretically anyway, through 2029, which would be his 10th year at Florida State. And while we won't get into every number here, you can find those at plantandspear.com in the article about the extension. I did say that he's going to be making around $8.05 million per year on average, which is going to be one of the highest paid coaches in the ACC. And to me, this is a good move by Florida State. I mean, obviously, to be honest, there was some mixed reviews on social media and stuff, which, you know, everybody's always got something to say on social media about it. They just feel like he needs to prove himself a little bit more. But at the same time, I like the move because, you know, like we've talked about multiple times before, Mike Norvell inherited an absolute mess. I mean, you came in during a pandemic year, you had a broken culture and a roster that needed to be flipped. And he's done that, and he has gotten this team out of the ditch and got us kind of back on the highway and moving at highway speed. So if you feel like he's your guy, you know, then why not go ahead and lock him up for a little bit? And at that point, too, it just adds further stability to the program. And, I mean, when you think about the last few years at Florida State, you know, ranging back to Jimbo Fisher's final years, then you just really haven't had a lot of stability here. And so it's nice to now be one of the more stable programs in the state of Florida. You know, when you look at what's happening with Florida, they had to make a coaching change and they had a bad year. If they, you know, I don't think they're going to have a good year this year. And if they don't, you know, with other teams in the SEC East like Georgia and South Carolina and Tennessee up and coming, how long are they going to, you know, tolerate that? You look at Miami, they've had to make a coaching change, and now they've also changed both coordinators. The dream staff that they talked about is falling apart by the day. So it just feels nice to be one of the more stable teams, if not the most stable team in the state of Florida. And to me, Mike Norvell, I mean, he's earned it. Like, I understand that, you know, we talked about there's some varying opinions because people are going to say you got to beat some ranked teams, you got to win some things. But again, you know, he came in during the pandemic year when you really couldn't have face-to-face contact, had to build a team, install a culture, and recruit and all that over Zoom, which is nearly impossible. We've talked about this a lot. You guys know my feelings on that. 2020 was kind of a wash. Yeah, there were some things in 2021 that were a little bit inexcusable, like Jacksonville State and the 0-4 start and things like that. But at the same time, when you look at the whole picture, you know, he's been killing it in the portal. I mean, every single year, he is the portal king. 2024 is a top five class. You got 10 wins last year. You went into the Superdome and you beat LSU. You know, you've closed the gap with Clemson. You know, you're not getting wiped off the field anymore there. You absolutely dominated Miami. You beat both of your rivals last year. And you know 23 is going to be a special season. So to me, like I said, I like the move. I think it makes sense. This is the things that you see when you have a real athletic director like Michael Alford. I mean, they're taking the steps to put Florida State back as one of the premier programs. You got the football-only facility being built. You know, you're getting some extra support staff added that they've done since Norvell's tenure's been here. And besides winning, I mean, of course, winning is the ultimate goal in college football. You can't argue that. The win-loss column at the end of the day is all that really matters. But when you look at a couple of the other things here, you know, I can't remember the last time a Florida State player was arrested or really anything other than like being asked to leave the team for a violation of team rules or something, like really any bad press over players and misbehaviors and things like that. They started the Seminole Scholar Program. It even said in the release that they had one of the highest GPAs in years, and they've also had a lot of community outreach. So to me, it's just not only are you getting the team back to success, but you're doing it in the right way, and I think that really does make a big difference. You don't have to turn on the TV and worry about bad press coming out for your team for one reason or another, you know, players being ineligible for one reason or another. So, like I said, to me, it's a smart move by Florida State. If you feel like he's your guy, then just get him, you know, go ahead and lock him up. Maybe they can do something to get Atkins locked up too, because I think you got to hold on to him. But again, I think Norvell is a good coach. We heard this for a long time from the kind of behind the scenes of other coaches, coaching circles, where they said, you know, you guys are getting a good one in Tallahassee and all that. And I think when you look back at his overall record from Memphis and as a coordinator at Arizona State and things like that, then you knew the 2020 and the 2021 was the outlier. And we talked about that in past episodes too, where I don't feel like that is the Mike Norvell as a football coach. That was him trying to fix a mess, which he really didn't have a whole lot of experience in either. So, and you know, there was a lot of hot seat talk there for a minute. And now that you've seen 2022, that to me is more of what you would expect from Mike Norvell. Now that he's got his players in place, you know, they developed Jordan Travison to be one of the premier quarterbacks in college football. You know, and to me, that just, it goes to show, you look at his coaching hires. He brought in Alex Atkins. He's got Tony Tokars, who looks like a promising young coach. You look at his coaching tree and the guys like Dan Lanning and Kenny Dillingham, who's now the head coach of Arizona State. And he has a successful tree, too. So to me, it was worth sticking with him, giving him the chance to get this roster right, get this culture right. And now we'll see what 2023 does. I mean, he's going to have to put his money where his mouth is, because there are high expectations this season. And do I think it's national championship or bust? Now, I'm not going to say that, because it's just really hard to win the national championship. But I do think you need to get double-digit regular season wins. I do think you need to win the ACC. I do think you need to be in contention for the playoffs, or at least, you know, make a New Year's Six bowl after winning the ACC. Because, you know, if you're going to be one of the highest-paid coaches in the ACC, you know, you got to live up to that. And, you know, something else that recently came out about the 2023 was, Florida State returns the most production in all of college football, I believe it was. It was 87% of their production returns. There was a thing on PFF where they said that Florida State is the only team in college football to return a player that is top 10 rated per PFF grades at every skill position. So, I mean, you know, the spotlight's going to be on them. They're going to have to perform. And I understand there's some hesitation by some people, but I think he's a good coach who's going about things the right way. And, you know, if you feel like he's your guy, then go ahead and lock him up and get that stability. And it's going to pay dividends in recruiting too. You know, talking about the hot seat, there's no more hot seat talk anymore. You just squashed all that by getting him a contract extension and paying him what you are. So I think you just kind of, you squashed that. And now you know who's your guy. You know who's your leader. And you can move forward. Now, is he going to be the next Nick Saban and win 6 national championships? I don't know that. Nobody knows that. But there's not a lot of coaches who do win that many national championships. I think you got a guy who took a team that was pretty far down and got them back to 10 wins within a couple years. You know, everybody wants overnight success, and sometimes it just doesn't work like that. But what he's been able to do through the portal, you know, with the top 5 recruiting class in 24, like we talked about, and just being able to get this team back to respectability, I think that earns the raise. You know, hopefully he can get something, you know, a really big season in 23 and then moving forward. But I do like the move. I think it's smart by the Florida State Athletic Department to go ahead and lock him up. So just a couple of the contract details. Like I said, you can find all this on plantthespear.com. We won't go into every single number. It's going to be a per ESPN report, it's going to be a year-by-year step up, starting with around $5.3 million in 23, $7.3 to 24. And then 8.5 at the final year of his contract, with some retention bonuses. And of course, there's some 6-figure bonuses in there for making New Year's Six bowls, first round of college football playoffs, as well as the national championship. He does have a buyout that is $6 million for 23, $4 million for 24, and then decreases by $1 million per year after that. So at least Florida State did put some protection in the contract for themselves as well. So, like I said, guys, I mean, you know, people right now, look at some of the coaching moves that people have made that just didn't pan out. And now they're already making, you know, another move, and they're having buyouts upon buyouts upon buyouts that they have to pay. You know, Florida State just got over Willie Taggart's buyout, I believe. So to me, like I said, I'm not mad at the move at all, to be able to just kind of steady the ship, you know, and just have consistency and not be paying buyouts upon buyouts. And I think he's one of the better coaches that you're going to find. You just got to give him a chance to build things. You know, like we said, not everything is always built overnight. And you've seen in a relatively short amount of time, I know, you know, 2020 to me was a wash. 2020 was kind of a learning experience for Mike Norvell there. And then all of a sudden you see he takes a big jump in 2022. In 2023, they're already talking about, you know, possible national championship aspirations. That's what the team talks about. All these players are focused on a national championship because they know what's at hand. They know they're returning that production. They know they have all that talent. And they know that they should have won a couple of extra games last year that they didn't. So to me, I think the program is in good hands. I think it's moving in the right direction. And that's something that Michael Alford talked about in the official press release. So with that said, we're going to go into the Seminole brand topic that I wanted to talk about, because that's part of why you're able to do these things is getting back to getting that revenue. And we saw last year they finished with a surplus, which we're going to talk about that later, so we won't get quite into that yet. But the thing is, like I said, with the Seminole brand, it's just it's a strong national power brand. And when you look at some of the numbers that I put together here from 2022, and what really sparked the whole thing was Florida State put a graphic out recently on social media talking about from 2014 to 2021, their average of 3.09 million viewers per game was the best in the ACC. And there was some pushback on that. A lot of people said that, okay, well, Florida State cherry-picked numbers from certain years to make themselves look good. And I kind of just laughed at that because I'm like, well, they're picking cherries. They're not very good at picking. They're picking some bad cherries, guys, because you skipped your own national championship season. You picked a time range where you include four of the worst years in FSU football in the last 40 years. So you didn't really do yourself a whole lot of favors. Now, I understand that a lot of those weren't, you know, bad years. You had an Orange Bowl win in there too, but and a playoff berth. But at the same time, when you think about it, look at where Florida State was during those years. You know, you kind of started to trend downwards after 2014. We know how 2018, really the end of Jimbo's career in 2017, into 2021. We know how that went. We know it was not a successful run in Florida State football history. But you also know that during that time, when you say best in the ACC, that puts you also head-to-head against Clemson. And that was during one of the best, most dominant periods in Clemson football history, where they won two national championships. They made the playoffs multiple times. They won the ACC just about every one of those years. So that's the thing is when Florida State was even in a down period and Clemson was at their peak, you're still, as far as TV viewership, you're holding your own. You're still kind of that flagship program in the ACC, in the conference. But we're going to talk about some data from 2022 as well. But before we just get into the TV stuff, that's the thing when I talk about, you know, Florida State has lacked that really strong forward-thinking presence at athletic director for some time now. And that's why I think you're really seeing a big difference under Michael Alford. I mean, if you think about it, not just football. And you know, like I said, we're a football-focused show here. But at the same time, we know that Florida State values the other sports. You know, there's softball but softball opening day is today, depending on when you listen to this podcast. They should be starting here in about 30 minutes at the time of this recording. And that's big for Florida State, too. So, you know, you went out and you have broken ground on the football only facility since he's been athletic director. You are able to make a lot of stadium improvements at the baseball stadium and the softball stadium. You know, I've seen the pictures on social media rolling out of what they're doing at Hauser and the softball complex. So, and it looks really good, you know, and it was needed. You went out and you got a former SEC Coach of the Year to take over your soccer program. You bring in Link Jarrett from Notre Dame, bring him back home to FSU, who we all feel I think is going to be a good hire, and I'm really excited for baseball season to get started. You're already hearing a lot of positive coming out of that program since making the coaching change. You know, and then you just locked Mike Norvell up to a multi-year extension. So I think you're really seeing the effects of having a legit AD in place, and that to me is one of the most unsung kind of changes here that has really made a difference for Florida State in multiple areas, not just football, but I do think it's making a big difference in football as well. And you know, some of these changes that they're trying to make and the moves that they're trying to do to put Florida State back as one of the premier programs, one of the premier athletic departments in all of college football, they don't happen overnight. They take time It takes a lot of money, and you know, they're doing the best they can with what they got. And that's one thing that, you know, we often hear the logo holds weight on social media, and it does. You know, you can take the Seminole brand into any house across the country, and people immediately recognize it. The war chant, you know, the logo, the name, all that is definitely recognizable across the country. You know, and the more success that you have on the field, the more progress that you're going to be able to make through finances and things like that. And before we talk about some numbers, the first thing that we have to keep in mind during all this is, you know, we do know that this is coming out of a down period, out of a rebuild period at FSU. That obviously kind of hurts your numbers a little bit there because people want to see a good product. They're not going to show up as much for a bad team. They're not going to donate as much to a bad team. We all know that. But at the same time, you also play in the ACC. And that kind of also handcuffs your income potential a little bit because it is the lowest paying Power 5 conference. And it's kind of by a wide margin. When you look at the SEC and what they're able to do through Navigate.com, who estimates a lot of the Power 5 payouts, I mean, you're looking at a $20 million gap so far, a little over $20 million. I think it's around 27 right now is what they estimated in 2022. And by 2025, it's going to be over $35 million. In revenue gap, and that's just, it creates a competitive disadvantage, and hopefully the ACC can figure out something to do to up their income, maybe renegotiate a TV contract. I'm not sure if they can even really add any teams because, I mean, if the Big 12 pays a little bit more than you, and that may change when they renegotiate without a Texas and Oklahoma, you know, are you really going to be able to get a West Virginia? How much do they add to the pot? You know, you'd like to get Notre Dame, who's already a part-time member, but why are they going to join the lowest-paying Power 5 conference? If they're going to join a conference, it's probably going to be the Big Ten because it just makes sense geographically and financially for them. So I'm not sure, you know, if they're going to be able to add anybody. But at the end of the day, they really just need to be able to elevate the ACC football programs as a whole. And that's something that the new commissioner has talked about. He has let the schools know that I understand there's a lot of important sports to everybody, but we know football is the revenue driver. And if we're going to ask for more money, we have to get better in football across the board. Because as they say, a rising tide lifts all ships. And that's the thing, is you have two teams that head and shoulders above carry this conference. And Florida State getting back to being one of the premier brands in college football, at least as far as success is concerned, that's going to go a long way to getting the ACC back, but you still need teams to take a step up. I mean, no one really thought Virginia Tech and Miami would fall flat on their face since they joined the ACC like they have and be in the position they are now. You got a lot of teams, you know, like Virginia that's struggling, and even UNC has been able to step it up a little bit, but you just need overall a more competitive depth in the ACC to help renegotiate some of those contracts. You know, and I know the grant of rights really hurts because the best thing for really Florida State and Clemson to do would be to get out of the ACC. But with the grant of rights locked in through 2036, they're probably not going to be able to go anywhere anytime soon because that buyout is just really kneecapping them being able to get out of here. I mean, if you think about it, if you flip-flopped the grant of rights from Texas and Oklahoma or the Big 12 to the ACC and say Texas and OU were locked in till 2036 and Florida State and Clemson were able to get out at 2025, I guarantee you it would be Florida State and Clemson in the SEC coming up, not Texas and Oklahoma. But it's smart for me that Florida State continues to advertise their brand to be able, you know, to put themselves in that position when and if conference expansion or super conferences or whatever the case comes about, because then you look like the most desirable team on the market. And, I mean, even the Big Ten went and grabbed two California schools. So, I mean, anything's possible. So I definitely agree with them continuing to market themselves, continuing to kind of show that they are a big college brand. And it also helps through advertising and merchandising and things like that. The other point that I want to talk about real quick is the fact that Florida State is one of the youngest Power 5 programs in all of the Power 5 conferences. This was before the realignment where they added, like, UCF and stuff in the Big 12. Before that, I think Florida State might have even been the youngest in Power 5. And the reason I bring that up is because that does affect your booster base. That affects the alumni that you have, you know, that deeply rooted generational booster base, that it does kind of put them a little bit behind. And Florida State's been able to do a lot with a little less for a long time and been really good at it. But, you know, more success and more time brings more booster donations, which also, you know, it all helps. And, I mean, in some of these cases, when you look at, like, Florida and Georgia and a lot of the schools around you, the SEC teams, they had a 50-plus year head start on Florida State. I mean, there was a thing recently where a guy put out a graphic about Blue Bloods, and I looked at it, and it's like Florida State, on average, was 54 years, I believe, younger than every other Power 5 team before the realignment. So it does put you behind. And, you know, it's just really impressive what they, when you think about it, what they were able to do in the short amount of time that they've been a football program, and with that lack of having that deeply rooted generational booster base. So, again, it is impressive what they've been able to do, but it does kind of hinder your revenue at the same time. So that's just something that I wanted to touch on. Now, Florida State does have a really large fan base, and they are a national brand like we talked about, but, you know, that is something just to keep in mind there. But 2022 was a successful year for Florida State, and if you can keep on this path, it's only going to compound in the future with adding in those booster donations. You know, you have the NIL collectives now that support Florida State that have made them a major player in the NIL space, and Battle Zen, who is the number one player for FSU football, is not even asking for donations yet. So if they were to open that up, I'm sure, you know, the Florida State fan base would flood them with donations based on the work that they have done. They have earned their keep for sure. So that is another good thing. But we're going to start with some numbers. Primarily, like I said, we're a football show, so we're going to focus on football numbers for right now. TV viewership. So talking about the Seminoles in 2022, they were ranked 15th overall in average viewership for the 2022 season with 2.03 million viewers per week. And that's up from 25th in 2021 at 1.27 million. So the crazy thing about that is you're still top 25 in average weekly viewership, even in a 5-7 year that you started 0-4. So that's still pretty impressive. But, you know, now you're looking at your top 15 in overall viewership. You're second in the ACC behind Clemson at 2.59 million viewers per week, average viewers per week. And the both of those teams, this is what I talk about when I say you're far ahead of the other teams in the ACC. The third place ACC as far as viewership is NC State at 43rd with an average weekly viewership of just 881,000. So, you know, less than half of what Clemson and Florida State are pulling in. So, it brings the question, you know, could you go to maybe a different revenue model where you pay the teams that bring in the most? I mean, it would surely seem fair to a team like Clemson and Florida State, you know, but then how do you elevate the rest of the brand? And I do think that is an important part of this. So, you know, it can be different. Difficult waters to navigate there. But, you know, Florida State, top 15 in viewership in 2022. So that was impressive. A benchmark in the TV ratings world, which is something I found when I was doing this research, is around the 4 million viewer mark. So anything that breaks a 4 million viewer mark is considered a significant benchmark in the TV ratings world. During the 2022 regular season, there were only 45 games that broke that mark. Now, if you think about it, 45 might sound like a lot, but that's the entire season, every week, every game. And Florida State had two of those break that mark, and a third if you count the bowl game. And the FSU-Clemson game was also pretty close to breaking that at 3.38 million. So when Florida State plays a big game, you know, there's eyes on the TV to watch it. Now, I understand it's a fair argument that they had a lot of non-Saturday games where maybe they were the only thing on TV. And they had a Friday game for the Florida game, which was one of their high-ranked games, and a Sunday game for the LSU, which was, you know, kind of helps them out. But at the same time, I know it's not as big a game as what Florida State LSU was. But when you look at, like, Clemson, Georgia Tech was on a Monday night by themselves, and they weren't anywhere on that week 0-1 list. So speaking of Florida State LSU, that was the ninth most watched college football game of the 2022 regular season with 7.55 million viewers. Florida State, Florida was the 12th most with 6.71 million viewers, and those two games were the highest viewed regular season games by any ACC team by a margin of 1.73 million views, with the next highest being NC State versus Clemson at 4.98 million. A few other TV highlights from 2022 that I want to talk about. When you look at their bowl game, the Cheez-It Bowl against Oklahoma, this is obviously, it's impressive because you were facing, now it's two big name brands, but you were facing a 6-6 Oklahoma team that a lot of people didn't like as a matchup to begin with, and it ended up being a really good game, just like the Florida game and the LSU game was. But that bowl game was the fifth highest non-playoff bowl game with 5.4 million viewers, eighth highest overall, second highest non-New Year's Six bowl game. And the reason I do bring that part up is, you know, not a lot of people are going to just watch a random bowl game where their team is not involved if there's not a whole lot on the line, but everyone's going to watch the playoffs. You know, it's kind of like the March Madness or the Super Bowl. You know, everybody's going to watch regardless. So you know, you had the fifth highest non-playoff bowl game. And I think it was the only other one that was higher than you that wasn't a New Year's Six bowl game was the Gator Bowl between Notre Dame and South Carolina. And also I bring up the New Year's Six because a lot of people get New Year's Day off and they sit around and watch football all day. You know, that's what usually what I like to do anyway. You also had the second highest rivalry week viewership at 6.71 million against Florida. That was right behind Ohio State and Michigan, ahead of the Iron Bowl and all the other rivalry week games on. You were the second highest week 0-1 viewership at 7.55 million. And there was a lot of big games, blockbuster games that first week. So that's an impressive feat as well. And seven games ranked top 10 in weekly viewership this entire season, including the bowl game, which again is impressive just to be, you know, ranked top 10 in weekly viewership seven times. So, you know, as you can see, when Florida State's on TV, they command viewership. And that is just part of the brand. You know, that is something that, you know, sometimes I feel like a lot of people tune in because they want to see Florida State lose because there's a bunch of haters out there. But at the same time, you know, it speaks to the brand that Florida State has, that coming off the season and the rebuild period, they're still one of the premier programs as far as TV viewership. Now, talking about attendance, Florida State, now, and again, this is another thing you have to factor in attendance with the pandemic year, with limited attendance, and you also have to factor in the fact that Florida State's been in a rebuild period. So, as for attendance, Florida State's five-year average is 65,746, which ranks 21st in all of college football. And I feel like it's important to note that 14 teams above you on that list have a higher stadium capacity, which obviously skews the numbers. You know, even if Florida State was to sell out every single game, you still can't surpass them because they have a higher capacity. Furthermore, 11 of those teams saw a decrease in average attendance over that five-year span, whereas Florida State saw an increase of 2.29% and a 14.61% jump in 2022. Those attendance numbers were second in the ACC behind Clemson at 14th with an average of 80,500, which again is a larger stadium capacity than Doak Campbell holds. And also, like we've talked about before, think about how the past 5 years have gone. They've had multiple national championships, playoff runs, you know, things like that. So, you're a good bit down from them, around 15,000, but at the same time, you know, you're still holding your own with attendance and keeping up with a team that's been on one of the most dominant runs that they've had in program history. And that's also acknowledging that Tallahassee is kind of a hard place to get to. It is kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's a drive from anywhere besides the city. And game day hotel prices scare a lot of people off. I mean, I'd like to go to a lot more games than I do. But when you see those, you know, when you got to drive 7 hours from Charlotte like I do, and you see you're going to pay $800 for two nights at a Motel 6, that's a hard pill to swallow. So I wish, you know, maybe Alford can do something about that. I don't know if he listens to this. But anyway, I will say now, to be fair, I think those numbers that they used were the reported numbers, maybe not actual butts in the seats, because they listed Miami with an average attendance of 55,000 over those past few years. And we know that's not true. That might be 5,500. At times, it might even be 550, but it sure is not 55,000. So maybe take that with a grain of salt. But the point remains is that Florida State is, you know, you're right now, you're top 25 in attendance, even with one of the smaller stadiums on the list. You are top 15 in TV viewership. And, you know, you had two sellouts last year, which was the first time that they've had that since they debuted the new stadium layout in 2016 after adding the Champions Club. And I feel like you're going to see, now you had some big home matchups, that does help. But I feel like you're going to see that become more of a trend. I mean, everybody knows that when a team's good, you want to be in the seats. You want to see that team play. You want to be able to say you saw that team live and in person that year. So I think you're going to see more sellouts this year, which creates a big home field advantage for Doak. I think the student section is going to be packed a lot more. Now, you did have seven home games last year. You had a ranked matchup against Wake. You had a big game against Clemson and Florida at home. And this year's home slate's not quite the same. I mean, it's a six-game home slate with Miami probably being your most exciting home game. You got Virginia Tech in there, but really you might not have any big ranked matchups. But still, like I said, just knowing that the product that we expect to see on the field in 2023, I think your attendance numbers are going to continue to climb. And the last section I want to touch on here is kind of what this all means, what this even leads to, and that's revenue growth. So all of this helped Florida State generate a surplus of $10.36 million in 2022, which is the second consecutive year they've been able to do so. And that's up from a $7 million surplus in 2020 to 2021, according to the Tallahassee Democrat. And we know a lot of that came from budget cuts and things like that. Their operating revenue of $161.1 million was the highest since 2018, which was largely in part to increase in ticket sales, marketing revenue, and university support, as well as booster support. This is all while factoring in Florida State's expenses increased at the same time. They had a big increase when looking at the numbers through recruiting budgets, team travel costs, coaching salaries, game day expenses, and administrative costs, just to name a few of them. So you're spending more, but you're making more, and you're still able to finish with a $10 million surplus, which allows you to do the things like the football-only facility, you know, like the giving Coach Norvell a nice contract extension, like adding those off-the-field positions that they have in the past. So all of that leads, you know, like I said, the more success you have, the more progress you can make on and off the field. And I do think that that is huge. You know, it just allows Florida State to take those steps, like we said, to be able to get back to being one of the premier programs and premier athletic departments in all of college football and in college sports. So it's exciting to see them be able to generate that revenue because we know it hasn't always been that way. They were at a deficit, I believe the article said, on the Democrat in 2019, I believe it was. They had a pretty big deficit. And a lot of that was due to the pandemic and things that really hurt their revenue. So to be able to kind of get yourself back, you know, you had to rebuild that too. So you're not losing anymore. You're getting back to winning. You're not at a deficit anymore. You're now at a surplus. And it's just overall, it's a positive feeling. It makes you feel good about the direction of the program under this athletic department. You now have strong leadership with a forward vision, and that's going to really pay off over the long run. And hopefully they keep Michael Alford for some time as well, because I think between him and the coaching, you know, that you got in there now with Mike Norvell and Link Jarrett, you know, he also did what they had to do to keep Lonnie Almeida at the softball program. You know, you hired a good soccer coach, and, you know, maybe they got to do something about basketball coming up soon. I don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out. But overall, I just think you're moving forward in a positive direction, and I think it's a good time to be a Seminole fan. And that has led to an increase in Seminole booster donations. Like I said, you got the NIL collectives that are doing their work, and when they do open up for donations, I have a feeling they're gonna flood in too. I just think overall, it's a positive thing. I mean, they launched the Bowden Society, and it's already up to 292 members at the time of writing this. So, you know, more success on the field is going to lead to more ticket sales, more booster donations, and all that stuff. That it's just a positive snowball that keeps building momentum as it grows. And so that'll be it for that part. And as we get ready to wrap up, I am just going to tack on, I think we got enough time, I can tack on this Bobby Bowden story real quick. So to start with, I just started reading a book called, it's titled Bowden, and it's How He Forged a Football Dynasty. And like I said, I'm only a couple chapters in, so we won't go too far in depth, but this is not the first Bobby Bowden book that I've read. I like reading about his career and his life. I mean, he just has a host of amazing accomplishments on the football field, off the football field, the way he did it through faith and family and football and the strong family ties that he has and the way he, you know, kept faith first in the program. And just the fact that he was able to be so successful over a span of generations. You know, you can't coach kids in the 70s the same as you could later in his career in the 2000s. You just have to handle people different. So be able to have success. And the game changed. You know, now he was a lot of it. He revolutionized a lot of different areas of the game. And so to be successful over that long period of time, learning and adapting how to handle players, how the game has changed, it just really speaks volumes to, you know, when you talk about the greatest of all time. And, you know, he may not have the most national championships, but when you look at the span of success that he had and the way he did it, especially when you consider he started at a school that was almost ready to fold up the football program, and he basically built, you know, Florida State football from the ground up. So, you know, he is the godfather of this program, so to speak. He was the one that you know, really put Florida State football on the map for generations. And it's funny, even in the book that I'm reading now, in the very first chapter, they talk about an anonymous coach said that when they took on Bobby Bowden at Florida State one time, they actually had someone film some of their practice, and they put microphones in the visitor locker room at halftime so they knew what they were going to do. They already knew what Florida State was going to run, and they cheated. They openly cheated, and they didn't. Of course, they didn't get caught, but they still lost. He said, "We cheated and still couldn't beat them." So that just speaks to how good Bobby Bowden and his Florida State teams were back in the day, to literally have a team cheat against you and they still can't win. But all that leads into the story of the first time I met Bobby Bowden. And like I said, I've teased you guys with the story for a while, and I've never been able to have a chance to share it. I'll keep it quick, but it's a fun little story. And shout out to my friend Jonathan, who was there with me. I know he's going to kind of trip out when he hears this, because it's a fond memory that we both share, and we talk about it all the time. But so set the stage for you. It's probably about 2003. maybe 2004. I think I was around 15, 16 years old. And I grew up in a small town in South Georgia, a couple hours outside of Tallahassee. And we used to, when he got his license, we used to drive over to Tallahassee just to go hang out around campus and see Doak Campbell because we just loved the football program. You know, we were two Florida State fans growing up together in a sea of Georgia and Florida fans. So we kind of always had each other's back for the Noles. So we just would ride over there and check out the stadium and stuff like that. And we had been over there all day, and then we were about to leave, and we decided, let's just stop by the stadium one more time. And, you know, I kind of grew up around the stadium a little bit with my brother going to Mike Martin Senior Baseball Camp. My dad would take me over to Doak, and I probably shouldn't say this, but there's usually a gate open somewhere so you can get in to see the field and see the stadium. So anywho, we were sitting in the stadium just kind of looking around. There was probably about actually 10 other people there with us, kind of not with us, but there at the same time looking around. And we started seeing some people towards the end zone, and we're like, okay, well, hopefully we don't get in trouble. And then we see more people start to come out, and we're like, did we just walk up on a practice or something? And so sure enough, here comes the players. They start coming out to practice. And at this time, we see a security guard coming around asking people to leave. And they're just kind of one by one filing out of the stadium. And we're like, oh, man, we got busted. We're going to have to leave. So he comes around and we're like, you know, hey, it's my guy's birthday here. Can we stay and watch practice? And he said, well, let me see. Let me ask. And so he did. And they gave us permission to stay. And so we got to watch practice, which was pretty cool. And then afterwards, we were standing over towards the end zone in row one. And kind of looking at Bobby sitting there on the golf cart talking to the media after practice. And one of the media members, he sees us and he comes up and he's like, you know, are you guys, you want to go down there? And we're like, oh man, you know, we're just two wide-eyed teenagers who are basically looking at one of our, you know, childhood heroes right here. Like, I'm too nervous. There's no way we're about to go down there. We want to go down there. We want to go talk to him. We want to get autographs. You know, you can't, this was before smartphones when you could just take a picture with him. That kind of dating myself there, but you know, we wanted to go down there, and he's like, you know, but we were too nervous. So he says, nah, man, just go. Trust me. He's a great guy. He will love talking to you. So we go down there, and we end up talking to him for about 10, 15 minutes, and he actually knew about the little tiny high school that I went to in South Georgia from his days at South Georgia College in Douglas when he recruited that area. I knew they had a good basketball team, which was really stood out that he even knew that all these years later. And so it was just really cool. Like, he was such a humble, normal guy, the way he talked to us. And he actually invited us to practice the next day, which was really awesome. So after practice, after talking to him, we ended up, somehow we ended up at the team meal, and we ended up talking to a bunch of the players, and we ended up going to practice the next day. Now, keep in mind, we're just two teenagers, 4 hours from home. And we didn't have money for a hotel. And like I said, this was pre-smartphone days where you can't just book one online and sneak into the room being under 18. So we camped out in the parking lot, slept in his truck. And we woke up the next day, went over to Doak to wait on practice. And this was one of the kind of the most surreal moments ever. It's like, so let me say, so we're sitting in Doak Campbell. The sun's just kind of cracking up over the corner. It's still a little foggy in there. And it's quiet. I mean, it's nothing but silence. And we're sitting there next to each other waiting for practice. And we just hear this whistling over our shoulder, like from off in the distance, and, you know, like a whoosh, whoosh, and someone trying to get our attention. We're looking at each other like, you know, what do you want? And then we realize about that time we look over our shoulder and it's Bobby Bowden standing at the top of the stadium. Now imagine, you know, Bobby Bowden standing at the top of Doak Campbell Stadium, the sun kind of cresting over his shoulder and the fog. And so, I mean, it's a storybook moment. It's kind of crazy. So anyway, he's like, all right, boys, we're over at the practice field. You'll have to go over there. So we get up, we go over to the practice field, and we're walking over there. And he says, you know, we get to the gate, and it's a closed practice. And the security guard there says, well, I take it you guys are coach's special guests. And we're like, oh, I don't know, are we? Because I hope so. And so they let us in, and they shut the gates behind us, and we get to watch practice. We stood at the, like, water coolers with the team while they were taking breaks talking to them. And we got a bunch of autographs afterwards. And it's funny, I remember when the team was coming off the practice field, Darnell Dockett still played at Florida State at that time. And that's a big dude and a very intimidating looking guy. Like, I would hate to have to block him in the first place, you know, especially when you're some little 15-year-old teenager. And he must have been a little upset about something at practice because he was using some not so friendly words. And so I just let him walk on by because I didn't want him to, like, squish me or something. So I let him go. But then afterwards, we went over towards the locker room, not the locker room, but the entrance to the locker room, where they come out before the games, and we were just standing there waiting, and this is before it's all been remodeled and stuff, and we're just kind of standing there catching players as they come out, and I still have the hat with me in my office here, and it has Bobby Bowden on it, it has Mickey Andrews on it, it has Chris Ricks, it has all these guys, because Ricks was the quarterback at the time, and I believe it might have even been Ricks when he came out. He was like, you know, hey, who you guys waiting on? And we told him a couple guys, and we told him Darnell Dockett was one of them. And so he kind of walked us back into the facility to be able to get those autographs, which was pretty cool in itself. We got to spend some time in the room with the national championship trophies and the ACC championship trophies, Orange Bowls and stuff like that. We got to meet the team chaplain who prayed for us at that time, which was really awesome experience as well. And it just overall, man, it was just so cool, like, to be able to have that, to go to the practice, to meet Bobby Bowden, to go to a closed practice, to be able to walk around the facility there and see all the trophies and everything. And I owe all that to Bobby Bowden and his graciousness to let us have that experience. And, you know, it just speaks to the type of person that he was, that because of him, he left a lifelong impression, a lifelong memory for two young Seminole fans that he sure enough didn't have to. They could have easily turned us away at practice. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to fly out to Pasadena in 2013 and watch Florida State win a national championship. And that was one of the, you know, coolest moments as a Seminole fan that I've had. But to me, it definitely comes in second to that experience, because it was just so cool to be that close up and be, you know, at a time when, like I said, you were a young, impressionable fan, to be able to have that experience. So it was so fun. It was so exciting. And it's something that I know myself and my friend Jonathan, we will never forget for the rest of our lives. And like I said, we still talk about it. So that's my Bobby Bowden story. And it's pretty awesome to be able to share that with you guys. I hope you enjoyed it, because, like I said, it's something that I'll never forget. I still have some pictures laying around from that day that I need to find. But, you know, that's when you had the little wind and snap cameras. So who knows where those pictures are at, or even if they're still in any good condition. But so anyway, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here so we don't go too long. I just wanted to share that story with you guys just to kind of, you know, paint the picture of why I even do this, why I decided to start this as a hobby, and just, you know, kind of why I've developed such a love for the program and the football team and the university, and just kind of my history of being around the program a little bit. So that was the main point of that. And I appreciate you guys if you tuned in. Stay tuned in for the end of this to listen to that. But as always, guys, like I said, be on the lookout for what's next. It is the off season, so we'll have to just kind of take news as it comes. But I do have some things coming up. We'll probably do some shorter things previewing 2023 position groups that I've started on the website that we'll put in podcast form for you guys. But with that being said, we'll end it like we always do with a thank everyone for listening. Thank you for all your support, and go Noles.